You are listening to the Diesel Powered Podcast, the voice of Diesel Punk on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Brought to you in part by Comic Bento. If you're like us and love comics and graphic novels, you can get a bento box of mystery comics every month in your mailbox for less than 20 bucks, guaranteed to have at least $50 worth or more. Every month, it's like Christmas or your birthday. Check out our sponsor at mycomicbento.com. That's mycomicbento.com. Also brought to you by Audible. If you love audiobooks and great audio material, check out audibletrial.com/dieselpoweredpodcast for your choice of over 100,000 titles. Free to try on us just for checking them out. Again, go to audibletrial.com/dieselpoweredpodcast. And now, it's time for the Diesel Powered Podcast with your hosts, the boss, Larry Amyet, the darling, daring, darling of the skies, Daisy O'Dare, and the man from the Fedora Chronicles himself, Mr. Eric Fisk. Take it away, guys.
Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of the Diesel Powered Podcast. This is your host tonight, Boss Larry. Johnny's taking a little bit of break for a while, and he'll be back in the next few months, and looking forward to that. But I tell you what, we've got a good show lined up. Here I am in good old-fashioned Dallas-Fort Worth, where the weather's changing, about to turn into fall-like weather, they say. But let me introduce my co-host, and ever so lovely, Daisy O'Dare. Say hi, Daisy.
Hello, all you sheiks and shebas. Boy, I tell you, the weather's going a little bit crazy around here. The high today was 80, and it's going to be in the 50s a day or two from now, so things are going a little cuckoo these days.
Wow. Sounds like a little bit what's happening around here. We might get some storms later. Okay. And want to welcome back to the show our new co-host, Eric. Hey, Eric, say hi to everybody.
Hey, everybody. It's Eric Render King Fisk here, coming from you live here in downtown Ringe, New Hampshire, from the Fedora Chronicles studios on the on the penthouse floor here in the Fedora Chronicles Tower, and it is already feeling quite a bit like winter. So everybody bring in your chickens and your goats and your ducks and the rest of your livestock, because it is going to be a bitter cold one. We are dipping almost close to freezing here in the Fedora Chronicles headquarters.
Wow. Fantastic. Well, great to have you with us again, Eric and Daisy. Good to have you back, as always. Well, I think we have a nice show lined up for us. We're going to talk about a little bit about some books and some movies that are coming out. I understand now that I think, Daisy, you recently finished a book. Want to talk a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, gee. Okay. Right off the bat. Well,
right off the bat. That's right.
I did say in our last show that I was going to review our friend and occasional co-host Charles Cornell. He has a book called Dragonfly, which he was so kind as to send a copy of to me. But I have not finished it yet. I like what I've read so far, but that's all I'm going to say until I'm done and can give it a proper review that it deserves. But there's another Diesel Era history book that I finished recently, and the title alone is kind of what grabbed me. is called Tinseltown: Murder, Morphine, and Madness at the Dawn of Hollywood.
Sounds interesting. What's it about? Besides what the title says.
Sorry, that amused me. You make me laugh, Larry. Okay. Well, there was a... In the early days of the film industry, there was a lot of... there was a lot of stuff going on. I mean, it's going on now, but they weren't quite sure how to handle these stars and all their vices and all their wild parties and all the trouble they got into, because it became such big news. And when it became big news, you know, the church ladies and the ministers and the decent society folks would come out and try to boycott the movies. And so this book's about several things, but one of them is the fine line that the people running the studios had to walk between putting out pictures that would make money and putting out pictures that wouldn't make anybody mad, which, you know, that sounds like a tough thing to do. But this story is mostly about the murder of a... What was he? I believe he was a director. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to go back for a second here. Yes, it was on February 1922, a director named William Desmond Taylor was found dead, shot in his apartment. And the case became a national sensation, but it was never really solved. And what happens is it tells the story of the investigation into his murder through the eyes of Hollywood, through the people who were in charge of the studio, which was Famous Players, which would later become Paramount. And then there's stories of three different actresses who have very different, you know, career paths going on, and they were all involved with him somehow. And then it was also talking about this case, and I don't know if you're familiar with the case of Fatty Arbuckle, Roscoe Arbuckle.
Oh, very much so. I wrote about that on my blog several years ago.
Yes, well, that case and the death of Olive Thomas and the murder of William Desmond Taylor, those were some of the high-profile incidents that happened in the movie industry that caused... Basically, the beginning of what would later on become the Hays Code. And so it also brings in William Hays as a character in the book. And it talks about how he, at first, you know, people talk about the Hays Code like William Hays was this tyrant who was just going to shut down everything fun about movies. But he was walking that line that I was talking to you about earlier. He wanted there to be good movies with relatable stories, you know, things that audiences would want to see. But he also didn't want to get the studio's films boycotted, and he didn't want the church ladies writing angry letters and things like that. So it talks about how he was dealing not only with the public, but he was dealing with the studio and what they wanted to do, and it was just a big mess, but it really paints him to be one of the more reasonable people who was in charge at the time.
That's really interesting, because I always just thought him to be, like you said, you know, the heavy Hays, that he, you know, he wanted to spoil the fun for everybody.
You know, maybe he got heavier later on, but in this book, he is... he's shown to be sort of, you know, he knows it's his job for the movies to help make the movies more decent, but he doesn't want to completely take all the fun out of it, because he was a friend of Fatty Arbuckle.
Oh.
Yeah, and he, you know, had sympathy for his friend and wanted his career to make a comeback. Because, you know, after Arbuckle was cleared of his charges, they wanted to start putting out his movies again, but all the church ladies and decent society folks wouldn't have it.
I wonder how much had so much to do with not so much the code, but how the code was implemented.
Yes, it doesn't talk about the... Right, it doesn't talk about the code. It's sort of just the groundwork that was laid for it. But it all mostly focuses around the investigations into the murder of this director, William Desmond Taylor, and all the secrets he had, and all the ways he was tied up with these others, these actresses who were all considered suspects, if not having been the ones who actually pulled the trigger, having been the ones who inspired the trigger to be pulled. If you know what I mean.
Sure. Well, that's fascinating, Daisy. What was the name of that book again?
Tinseltown: Murder, Morphine, and Madness at the Dawn of Hollywood. It's by William J. Mann, and it's just as good as any fictional mystery you'll ever read. It is absolutely fascinating. I say it's a fun read.
Very cool. Very cool. Eric, I understand that you've been you have one or two books you'd like to talk about.
Well, first of all, let me just point out here that it's really not fair because I'm a vivacious reader, I also subscribe to Audible, and that is the best way to listen, read, and listen to books or consume books the way I do. And being the stay-at-home dad and the house husband that I am, there's really nothing better than folding laundry, doing the dishes, and taking care of the rest of the house while being plugged in to something that opens your mind, expands the imagination, and just makes those long hours just melt away, waiting for everybody to come home. But I have two books here that if you are a historian of World War II, I think that these are two very, very essential books for everybody who is curious about what happened in and around World War II. And the first one that I have to recommend is one that I couldn't get through it fast enough. It was... every chapter is chock full of information that I think Diesel Punks would really, really love to enjoy and consume. And it is it's a book by Jim Mars, and it is called Rise of the Fourth Reich, the Secret Societies That Threatened to Take Over America. And it was published back in June 23rd, 2009 by the aforementioned Jim Mars. And Jim Mars is one of those people who... he's controversial. He likes to talk about the secret unknown history of the world, and he has a lot of books out there, and he talks about the occult and ancient aliens and the hostile takeover of the world from various sources. And this one here, I think it is probably the most important read, because the first couple of chapters talks to the reader about things that we were not told about World War II. And if you're a diesel punk and you're wondering what would have happened if the Nazis were able to finish their projects before the end of World War II, and Jim Mars lays out the map that says they actually did finish a lot of the projects that they were working on to take over the world. And it's sort of like really sort of scary, and the thing is that they just didn't finish those projects off in time. They were dabbling in electromagnetic propulsion. They were obviously the first jet and rocket engines, weapons of mass destruction, and the thing is that the idea that they were dabbling with flying saucers, of all things, if you can believe that. And ray guns and all sorts of just really far out there. We're talking about things that were 50 or 100 years ahead of their time. And, well, what happened in at the end of World War II? Where did all that stuff go? And the notion of the Americans and the Russians rushing in and, you know, like from both ends, coming in to gobble this stuff up and to get this stuff away from each other. Like, we were trying to grab stuff before the Russians, and the Russians were trying to grab stuff before us. And then, of course, that led up to this, the Cold War, as it were. And there's another notion of where did the Nazis go? Where did all these people go who were responsible for all this technology? And Jim Mars lays out this really great, or horrible, depending on your point of view. I personally think it's horrible. I think it's really scary. But the thing is that there are Nazis among us, or they were until they passed away. And what Jim Mars tries to sort of lay out, the understanding, is that we are slowly becoming the people, the enemy, that we had fought during World War II, talking about the rise of global fascism. And Jim Mars also lays out the definition of what's the word, what does fascism really mean? Fascism is not just like bad people in goose-stepping and wearing these audacious uniforms. Talking about the integration of the military, the government, and industry melding together into one. And everything is, it's all about perpetuating the state and crushing anybody who doesn't go along with this program. And it's an interesting read. The Rise of the Fourth Reich is a scary book. It is a very interesting book, and it lays out very much like an alternate future or an alternate history. Whether you buy into it or not, I don't know. That's for the readers. And then we go directly into another book, which is a great book to read back to back. And this one here is Operation Paperclip, the secret intelligence program that brought Nazi scientists to America. And what the author, Annie Jacobson, does, and she does this great job, whereas she goes even deeper into the last final years of World War II and the last final months of World War II. And she tells exactly how were former Nazis brought into America, and they were put into the heads of industry and the heads of science, and that there were a lot of And here's the thing: not all Germans were Nazis, not all Nazis were German, and there were some people who, listen, if you want to get ahead in the world, and you lived in Germany, as sad as it sounds, you had to align yourself with the Nazi Party. It's not fair and it's not right, but that's the way it was at the time. And there were a lot of people who were just following orders. But then there are the sickos out there who, like, really got into this. And there were people who were like, oh yeah, this is what I want. This is what I want to get into. I'm really into this. Also talks about, to a very large extent, Alan Dulles, who was the head of the CIA, and he was an American fascist, and he was the guy who, let's bring all these people in and let's pick up where the Nazis left off. And as a result, through the CIA, going behind the backs of the American president, we're talking about Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy, the first year of the Kennedy administration. How these Nazis who had integrated themselves into American industry and government did things behind the president's back where we're still living with the consequences of today. And as diesel punks, we love the idea of dystopia because we like having a good villain to fight. If you're looking for good villains and you want to know who the good villains are, Annie Jacobson's book on Operation Paperclip is a great place to start, and Jim Mars, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, is another, it's a companion book, and I think that you can't have one without the other, and they're psychological thrillers. They will really keep you up at night.
Wow, you sold me on that, Eric. And, you know, I think this, all these are great resources for diesel punks to draw upon. Daisy, your book talks about the dark early years of the movie industry. Lots of dirt and grit. And Eric, your two books, Scary as All Get Out, great resources for writers to pull in to create diesel punk style storylines.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would. Now, here's the thing. Now, I want to make a suggestion for Daisy. Because if Daisy, if you like stories about Hollywood and diesel punk, there's a great novel I want you to check out. It's called Fistful of Nothing. I don't remember who the author is.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a great diesel punk. It's probably one of the first diesel punk film noir novels I've ever read.
Oh, it's by Dan Glazer.
That's the man.
Yep. Very impressive individual. That's a great book.
I'll have to check that one out.
My book to talk about tonight, I've mentioned it before that I was reading Black City Saint by Richard A. Knack. I think I'm saying that right. It's K-N-A-A-K. It came out this year, back in March of this year, and is a fantastic diesel punk. The first thing that catches your eye when you look at the book is the cover. The cover is gorgeous. It has this great gold Art Deco pattern on it. And in the middle, you see a man. It's gray and black, and he's in the shadows, and he's got this fedora on, and his eyes are growing glowing green. It's fantastic. The storyline is that St. George, who had, in this case, turned out to be real, had killed the dragon, but in the course of doing so, was cursed, because the dragon was not the villain. The dragon had been guarding a gate that keeps the mortal realm separate from the realm of fairy. And in this case, the fairy is a lot more like the traditional fairy that you find in the Dresden novels. They're not cute little fairies. They are very powerful, dangerous beings. So after being executed by the Roman emperor, now he's cursed to coexist with the dragon inside him to guard the gate. And he's been guarding the gate for 1600 years. Gradually over time, that gate moved and is now located in Chicago. And he's in Chicago, is set in the 1920s, guarding the gate to keep the evil, powerful fairies from crossing over. Is a great novel, is a great detective novel, written in a pulp noir style from the first person. I highly recommend it. And pretty exciting stuff is that the author has confirmed that he is working on a sequel. So it's Black City Saint by Richard Knack. And you can get it through most major sources, including Amazon. I do highly recommend it.
You know what? That inspires me to ask a couple of questions. And one of the questions I would like to know is that are there a lot of diesel punk books out there that marry fantasy, like that kind of fantasy? Because when you think of dragons, you think of fantasy. Am I wrong?
And right, you're right.
And fantasy and diesel punk and alternate history. Are there a lot of novels? Because like that.
I don't know if there's a lot. A series that comes to mind is the Grim Noir series set during the 30s. The first book was titled Hard Magic. And it's a fantasy series. It's an urban fantasy where some at the end of the Civil War, magic returned to Earth. And different people have different powers. Some could start fires, some could control weather. And it's set in an alternate 1930s where Japan is the world threat. Germany executed Hitler shortly after the Beer Hall Putsch. So Germany never went fascist. And but the real world power is Japan. And it's all about this magical society that has established that fights other magical magic users. It's a very good series. So are there a lot? I don't know if there's a lot, but that series comes to mind. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I'm not gonna buy that book for my son. I'm actually gonna pick that up for my son and see what he thinks of it. Because anything with a dragon. I mean, you could put like a picture of a dragon on anything from shampoo to vegetables to hairspray. If it has a picture of a dragon on it, he wants it. So
I relate to your son because I love dragons myself.
How can you not like dragons?
But the character, St. George, is, I guess you could say, he's possessed by the dragon. The dragon lives inside him. And when he needs the dragon, he can call upon the dragon and he obtains the power of the dragon. And his eyes turn green, like they do on the cover. If you like the Dresden novels, he doesn't have the snarky attitude of Dresden, but it could fit well within the Dresden universe. I think your son would like the book. I highly recommend it. Okay, folks, fantastic. Well, we've got a lot of movies out right now. One that came out in November, at beginning of November, I should say. We're recording this on November 17th, so a few of these will be in the future here for us. But the one that came out in November 2nd, Hacksaw Ridge. Have either one of you seen the trailers for this?
I have definitely seen the trailer. So I'm sorry, Daisy. I did not mean to step all over you like that.
Oh, no. I was about to say, I actually haven't. So tell me about it.
Do you want me to go?
Go for it, Eric.
Because as always, you talk about World War II. I'm always going to my ears are going to perk up. But it's a movie about a pacifist who is drafted into the military. I believe it stars Andrew Garfield from Spider-Man fame. And it's the kid who... listen to me. He's like, I don't know, he's a very young duffer, 18, 19, 20 years old, and he simply refuses to fight. And he's called on the carpet for cowardice. And he's, look, I'm not a coward, I'm a pacifist. I'm not sure if it's due to his religion, if he was a Quaker or whatnot, but it's like, so he's sent to war, and well, what does he do? He becomes probably, spoiler alert, I think he becomes one of the first medics, I believe, to earn the equivalent of the Congressional Medal of Honor. And it's a story about how this soldier who refused to fight was responsible for saving many of his fellow soldiers in the heat of battle, and how this kid simply refused to fight, but he did everything in his power to serve his country by being of service to his fellow servicemen.
Tell you what, the The ads look fantastic. The trailer is directed by Mel Gibson. And I think it looks great. I haven't seen how it did at the box office. Rotten Tomatoes gave it an 85% based on the reviewers, on the critics' review. That's pretty good. Most movies, if it gets 85% or more, it's considered a good movie.
It's certified fresh.
You're certified fresh. That's right. So tell you what, that came out November 2nd. Now tomorrow, November 18th. That's gonna be exciting. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is released. For those that don't know, that's a prequel to the Harry Potter series set in New York in 1920s, based on the novel by the same name. Now, Rotten Tomato is giving it a lower rating than I thought. Last I looked before the show, they're putting a collective rating of 78% for critics.
What does a tomato know about movies anyway?
Well, all the tomato does is it compiles and averages.
I was being a snarky daisy.
But sometimes the critics will say one thing, but the people in general say something else. I'd like to know what they originally said about Harry Potter to start with, and other movies like that. I remember years ago, a local critic just could not understand Blade Runner. She said she just didn't understand it.
I don't believe that. I'm sorry. I don't believe that.
That was what she said. She didn't understand it. And it's like, okay. That was back when it first came out. But these critics don't always get it. Did the two of you see the little post from Johnny?
Which post from Johnny? There's been a couple.
He put it out just not too long ago that he saw the movie. And he said it is definitely Diesel Punk.
Let me find it here.
It was a message. He contacted the three of us. It was through Facebook
there
Messenger.
He goes. Here's what he has to say. Fantastic Beast was a fantastic movie. It meets every tenet of Diesel Punk and could become a Diesel Punk classic.
I think we're going to have to see it now.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm going to this weekend. If I can fit in some time, because there's a convention in Memphis this weekend, and I'm not doing anything official there, but I'd like to, make my presence known.
There you go. So, pretty exciting stuff. I think and the neat thing is that this is just the beginning of it. I understand they're already working on the sequel. Big names are already being bantered about. I understand. I think I saw that Johnny Depp has already made an appearance, probably in makeup. Nobody noticed, but that he's going to have a more prominent role in the future, in the next one. They haven't said what he was going to do, but he was going to have a more prominent role. So pretty exciting stuff. I think it's going to be another one of those movies when people say, what's Diesel Punk?
Yikes, yeah.
We've got another one to say, have you seen Fantastic Beasts? Well, yes, I love it.
That's Diesel Punk. What other movies, not to sideline you here, what other movies do we have already where you can point people to say, well, that's Diesel Punk? What other movies do we have already? Oh, yeah, that's one.
That's a great one.
What about Indiana Jones?
All of them.
Absolutely.
Especially Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And the nice thing about both of those is most people have seen them.
Yes.
Especially Raiders.
Yeah. If you're listening to this podcast and you have not seen Raiders of the Lost Ark yet, you need to have somebody smack you upside the head for me. that's inexcusable. That's high crimes and Mr. Bean's demeanors. That's treason right there.
There you go. I go ahead and especially for older individuals, I mentioned Chicago.
Really?
Because I consider that diesel punk. I don't think it has to have sci-fi and fantasy.
Well, then,
I think Chicago meets fits the bill.
Well, that's funny then, because if you're going to throw that in, before we go any further, you have got to say Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow. By all means, a lot of people.
I knew I was missing something.
A lot of people did not like that movie, but. I absolutely totally love it. I don't think they could have found somebody else to play Sky Captain besides Jude Law. Although I don't know, it's like I love him and I hate him. You know, I love him and I hate him. But if you're going to say that Chicago is diesel punk, one movie that I saw recently. Which is very film noir, as it were. And I just got a Blu-ray copy of it, and it is an absolutely gorgeous yet brutal movie. It's called Mobster Squad. And it's a worthy successor to The Untouchables and Mulholland Falls. Those are really two great movies, and they basically go along the same sort of plot line. Whereas is that you have a good cop, a tough cop with a heart of gold, going after a mobster that is allegedly above the law. That's another great one. But you know, I'm going to have to watch Chicago again and see what you're talking about.
Well, this, you know, Johnny points out the fantasy dance sequences.
Okay.
And I point out the attitude.
Yeah, okay.
Anybody that's worth a bucket of warm spit in the movie either gets killed or dumped or ignored or loses. Look at all the losers in the movie. The poor girl that was on the Russian or Ukrainian girl that was on death row, she gets executed. But as she keeps emphasizing, I'm innocent. Didn't do it. Amos, mm-hmm. Mr. Cellophane. The DA who tries Roxy, of course, he's, you know, loses, obviously. Whereas, look at the winners. Roxy and Velma, they get off.
Yeah,
I've drawn the blank. The attorney, I can't think of his name. Richard Gere's
character. Yep, Richard Gere. Yep.
And we're on their side.
Oh yeah, and that's important, Daisy. Thank you. We're on their side. So when they get off, it's like, yay, Velma and Roxy got off after murdering. After murdering her husband and brother and sister and sister and boyfriend and all, yay, the murderers got off, and now they're all celebrating and everybody's clapping. So who are you rooting for? The anti-hero.
Yeah, anti-heroes, that's what makes it.
And that's the punk.
Yeah.
So that's why I say it doesn't need the dance sequences. They're fantastic. Yeah, he's right. They are very fantasy. They update the costuming and so forth. But I think the attitude, the anti-hero theme, gives it the needed punk to make it diesel punk. Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, another great example. A great example.
And you don't even need the attitude in that one because you have alternate history.
Yeah, that is great. That is a movie that I think that, well, it's Quentin Tarantino, and it's one of those movies whereas is that It's not appropriate for kids, obviously. But also on top of that, it's a very hard R. I think it's almost NC-17 with a lot of the graphic violence and the copious use of fake blood and gore. I think that is, by all means. But it's like that is, I think that is also an essential example of diesel punk.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's that dirtier, grittier that we talk about. So, yeah, that's some examples to me, especially, I mean, that's one you could really say to somebody that's not into sci-fi.
Yeah.
You tell them Inglourious Basterds and mention a few details, alternate history, definitely bad attitude. It just oozes attitude through the movie. And then Chicago, I include Chinatown.
Yeah, I think the thing is that there's sort of like a line that is not being moved so much as being blurred, as it were, because a lot of neo-noir, whereas period films that have been released since, I don't know how far you want to go back, because Chinatown is... You know, Chinatown's this early 70s. Go even a couple of years before that, with Bonnie and Clyde, with the aforementioned, let's see, Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty. And with Warren Beatty, there's a couple. What is it about Warren Beatty in period films, man? because there's a great biopic, and yes. I don't think it got enough press. Bugsy, whereas he plays the title role, Bugsy, and that is an incredible movie that's really enjoyable. there's also another movie coming up. It's called Rules Don't Apply. And he plays a background character. He plays Howard Hughes in the typical, wearing the typical film noir working man's uniform, the fedora, the dress shirt tie, and the leather jacket. Just by coincidence, it's what I'm wearing now. It's what I wear almost every day. And that's about these two kids who fall in love in Howard Hughes's industry. Two employees of Howard Hughes fall in love with this eccentric character, sort of pulling strings in the background. And apparently, is it a drama? Is it a comedy? Is it a dramedy? Whichever it is. So, Daisy, have you seen anything about that?
About
Rules Don't Apply.
Rules Don't Apply. I haven't
seen it. I've seen the ads for it, and in fact, it comes out later this month. I think you gave a good rundown, a better rundown than I even get out of the trailers. Eric,
it's another one of those movies that I've been following closely. Mm-hmm. And you look at the cast, the all-star cast here. You have Warren Beatty, Matthew Broderick, Alec Baldwin, Annette Bening, and newcomer Alden Enrich, I think is his name, and Lily Collins. And it looks like it's going to be an all-star cast. It's not really getting a lot of really great reviews, but I what is it about critics and Warren Beatty? I don't understand.
Good question. Looking it up, Rotten Tomatoes gives it collectively 68%. Metacritic, 64%. So like you just said, I don't know. That's a good question. I'm not sure why critics don't seem to like Warren Beatty.
And I thought Bugsy was awesome. It was like was like one of those movies that was like an Oscar contender.
Good movie. Speaking of movies, we have one coming out the same time. This is a great month. If you want diesel era flicks, this is a great month for it. At the same time of Rules Don't Apply, which Eric was talking about, November 23rd, the same day, Allied comes out.
Oh, yeah.
And for those that don't know, that's that new Brad Pitt movie. He plays a spy in World War II who ends up marrying another spy in World War II during the war. War's going on. And then he's told, according to the ads, he's told by the British High Command, we think your wife is a counter spy. We think she is working for the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
You're the figure to find out whether or not she is working for the Nazis, and if she is, you're instructed to kill her on the spot. It's like, wow.
I mean, could you imagine somebody saying to you, hey, bub, your wife might be a spy. You need to find out if she's a spy or not. And if she is, you have to kill her. I couldn't do that. What, are you crazy?
And then they make they give him a threat. You either, if she is a spy, you kill her or we kill you.
I want to give a shout out to Marion. How do you pronounce her last name? I'm dying.
Cotillard. I don't know.
Thank you, Daisy. She was incredible in Public Enemies, the biopic of John Dillinger and Melvin Purvis. It was an epic movie, and it's hard not to root for Johnny Depp as playing a villain. It's sad and it's unfortunate and it's scary. And it's a Michael Mann movie. And she gives a performance, whereas it's like, oh, she cuts your heart out and she makes you eat it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could not remember the name of that actress who you're talking about. She's in this movie, isn't she?
Yeah, she is. She plays the love interest. She plays Brad Pitt's wife.
She plays the wife. And you're right. I love Public Enemies. That's a fantastic movie. I think it does a good job. Always a little, maybe a little overly sympathetic to Dillinger. But that being said, this is not too far off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty exciting stuff. I look forward to that one coming out. Now, there's a new Ben Affleck movie coming out. I'm trying to look to see where he plays a gangster. Live by Night.
Okay, what now is that also another period film?
It is. I mean, we're just hitting it back to back. It's like Hollywood's discovered that, wow, there was something called the 20s and 30s and 40s. Set during Prohibition era. Let's see. It's a according to Wiki, it's a upcoming American crime film written, directed, and co-produced by Ben Affleck, based on the 2012 novel of the same name by Dennis Lehan. Lehan?
Okay.
Film stars Affleck, Elle Fanning, Brendan Gleeson, Chris Messina, Sienna Miller, Zoe Zeldana, and Chris Cooper.
Ooh,
and
that's a
and
good cast.
Follows, yeah, big cast. It follows a Ybor City bootlegger who becomes a notorious gangster. Scheduled for release, limited release December 25th, 2016, wide release January 13th, 2017.
Well, you know how it is. I mean, You had me at bootlegger.
I hear you.
Same here.
Let's see. There was something else I saw that I thought was... Oh, it's... that's Tampa, Florida, it says here. Ybor City. It's co-produced by Leonardo DiCaprio.
I'm hit or miss with him, but he was fantastic in The Aviator.
Oh, he was. And Great Gatsby. I've gotten where I really like Leo DiCaprio. I think he's underrated. But set in Tampa, Florida, so we got some Southern Diesel going on here. Cool. Okay, so we got something good coming out beginning of January. The fun just continues. Fantastic. Wow, we just keep on going. But you know what? We're just about on the hour, guys.
I can't believe it. Where'd the time go?
Tell you. This has been fun. This has been fun. Well, you know, on that note, then, I think you mentioned an interesting idea, something you said during our discussions, Eric. You mentioned about maybe talking about some of the projects we got going on.
Yeah, because I want to hear what Daisy is up to. I want to hear what Daisy's is up to and what kind of projects she's working on, and then I'll share with you guys what I'm up to on the Fedora Chronicles side.
Well, as far as projects, I'm really not doing that much lately. I have stepped down as the official leader of the Clockwork Mechanalist here in Memphis. I'm still going to be involved, but I'm handing the reins of the ship back to my good buddy, Captain Greenhill. And as far for those of you who don't know, the Clockwork Mechanalists are the Memphis-based steam, diesel, whatever you have it, punk group. We are very open and accepting. And we usually have tables and do panels at some conventions, but I think we're pretty much done for the year. So you may be seeing us at conventions around Memphis next year. Things are a little slow right now, but I'm going to see what I can get picked up in the future.
Very cool. Eric, what do you have going on with the Fedora Chronicles?
We got a lot of things coming up, because the thing is that now that political season is over, we're going to be getting back to a lot of the columns that used to be our bread and butter before the political season. We're going to be catching up on all of our flicks to hold you over, and we're also going to be picking up our food and drink section, which is a great way for... it's a great article for me to sort of introduce people to how to jazz up your meal times. And I also have a regular column called Dishwasher Confidential, where I talked about what goes on behind the scenes in restaurants. But we also have a series of podcasts, Metaphysical Connection, where my co-host Walt Schnabel and I are wrapping up our series on the occult in World War II, leading up to the Kennedy assassination, and talking about the evil forces that were behind that nefarious deed. And we recorded that to the last episode of this series today, and that'll be up. It's going to be a 3-hour long episode, which is going to be perfect for all of you to listen to during your drives as you're going over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house. So, and we have a handful of other things, and we're also going to be talking a lot about Rogue One in less than a month. We have less than a month to go, and I will tell you that I think the entire Star Wars franchise is diesel punk in space, but your mileage may vary. How about you?
No, Johnny will definitely agree with you on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. How about you, Larry? What are you up to?
Well, on my blog, I'm continuing on with the Diesel Punk Lexicon. One interesting development is that one of the words I covered not too long ago was retrofuturism, and I'm sure all our listeners remember the spirited conversation we had here on the show about the subject. And I got some interesting feedback from one of both listener and reader, and Tiana Marie, who, I'll just read what she says. That podcast on Dieselpunk and retrofuturism was a really good discussion, by the way. I feel like Charles was really stretching the definition of Dieselpunk, but at the same time, I like the way he thinks.
Exactly.
For the record, I'm more inclined to agree with you, Larry. Haha. And she wrote a little bit more in her comment, and I appreciate your feedback, Tiana, and we appreciate the readers, period. You guys are what keep us on the air. So I'm continuing on with the lexicon, and I'll be doing a new update here this weekend, and we'll be continuing on with that, and and of course then dieselpunks.org is chugging along, and lively conversations taking place there. Drop on by and join in on the conversation, and this is the internet and interwebs are just moving along in the dieselpunk world. Okay, I tell you what, I think, guys, we need to wrap this show up, put this one to bed. Daisy, would you start the process of closing us out?
Well, I ought to say, whether the weather is cold or whether the weather is hot, we will be together whatever the weather, whether you out there like it or not. And I hope you do. Good night, everybody.
Thanks, Daisy. Eric?
I just wanted to wish everybody a very merry Thanksgiving. Safe driving. Drive sober. Drive safe. But always keep your chin up and your fedoras on.
Fantastic. Okay, Eric. Well, and Daisy, thank you very much. And to all our listeners, this is Boss Larry. If the weather starts to change, a lot of areas of the country are getting chilly now. So think about those plants and animals outside, and think about your neighbor. Check on your neighbor. Do they have heat? Is everything okay next door? Because take care of each other. Because that's what life is all about. We'll catch you next time. Bye.